LAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. An explosion injuring 11 people today at the Lord Corporation plant in Sagertown, Pennsylvania, about 35 miles south of Erie. Four firefighters and seven plant employees taken to the hospital. That company developing adhesives, coatings, motion management devices, and sensing systems. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau headquarters in Washington will be closed all this week. The latest government agency to be taken over by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency under the direction of the Trump administration. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut telling ABC's This Week.
This is a red alert moment when this entire country has to understand that our democracy is at risk. And for what? The billionaire takeover of government.
President Trump heading to New Orleans to watch the Super Bowl in person. Upon arrival at the game, the White House says Trump will meet with family members of the victims of the New Year's ramming attack on Bourbon Street. This is ABC News. Super Bowl Sunday is here. Fans descending on the Big Easy. 80,000 packing the stadium today. ABC's Will Reeve in New Orleans. Who's been spotted around the Crescent City ahead of the game today?
In New Orleans, Philly and KC fans are ready to go.
We got the X Factor. We got Patrick Mahomes.
Birds fans in the sky, breaking out the Eagles fight song on a plane. Super Bowl week is always full of superstars off the field. Taylor Swift flying in on Friday night to support boyfriend Travis Kelce. Bradley Cooper bringing in his cheesesteak truck. And the casts of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Abbott Elementary reuniting to support the Birds.
Flu surging in the U.S., emergency medicine doctor Stephanie Whitmer telling ABC News one reason, very low vaccination rates.
Definitely not too late for the flu shot. CDC is still recommending it, and it takes some time for that immunity to build, so the sooner you can get your flu shot, the better.
I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Donald Trump is president again, and Democrats need to take a new approach to combat this presidency. Part of that is recognizing the realignment of how we arrived here. In last year's election, one thing Trump did successfully was turn out people who might not otherwise vote. In Wisconsin, he increased his vote share in all 72 counties en route to the largest popular vote total in state history. How did he do this? Well, as I see it, there are two factions of Republicans. One is the more traditional country club Republicans. The other is the newer group, what I'm calling the pro-wrestling Republicans. In my latest column, I wrote about how Donald Trump transformed the party by prioritizing the pro-wrestling Republicans, and why recognizing this new reality is critical to Democrats' ability to grab a steel chair of their own and fight back. Subscribe and read it now at the Recombobulation Area.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Advocates are hopeful Wisconsin's new Office of Violence Prevention will make a difference, but could its funding be in jeopardy? Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Reggie Moore heads community safety at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He formerly led Milwaukee's Violence Prevention Office during a critical period following a 70% increase in homicides in 2015.
The fact that cities are getting smarter on crime and the impact that these types of interventions can have in addressing violence before it happens, I think is something that people understand that we should be doing.
He says that starts with a public health approach to preventing gun violence. It's that approach, he adds, that contributed to Milwaukee's four-year decline in homicides and non-fatal shootings beginning in 2016, one of the biggest declines in the country at the time. While violence prevention offices are not new, larger investments in them are. Moore says in 2016, when he started leading the Milwaukee office, few existed.
For hundreds of years, the country has taken a criminal justice approach solely to this issue, but understanding the fact that this is also a public health crisis and hearing the governor declare this the year of the kid, I think is timely given the fact that since 2020, gun violence has become the leading cause of death of children.
Governor Evers announced he's directing $10 million to the Office of Violence Prevention. The funds are from the American Rescue Plan Act and will provide grants to school districts, law enforcement agencies, and nonprofits to help reduce gun violence. It's still unclear whether the Trump administration will impact federal funds for programs like these. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of sunshine, a light southwest breeze for your Sunday. Highs in the upper teens. For the overnight, partly cloudy skies, lows near 0 to 5 below. Monday, we'll see increasing clouds, highs in the mid-teens, light snow Monday night. Right now, it's 13.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll review the Super Bowl, see who won, who lost, and what the commercials were, the news, headlines, and more. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus Law Review, and my name is Jim Santel. I'm your host for this, the second hour of our broadcast this weekend, addressing in ways that we often do the trappings of the rule of law, the invocations of that in real time in America. Much of this, if not all of this, in response to the breakneck speed with which our president is issuing executive orders in a great variety of areas, financial, domestic, international, having to do with the basic ways in which we live and pursue our livelihoods in our nation, and the roles of federal judges in addressing whether those things that the president is doing are constitutional, legal, contrary to, or in compliance with the laws as passed by the Congress. An awful lot going on right now in the federal district courts of our nation, perhaps very soon in the appellate courts of our nation, and maybe, yes, indeed, back in the Supreme Court, when one or more of these challenges to what Donald Trump is doing may reach that high tribunal, and requiring the justices once again to determine whether or not they meant what they said back in July when they talked about this hugely muscular, energetic, vigorous, decisive, speedy executive that's necessary, as opposed to a feeble executive, which is not consistent with the Constitution. That's what John Roberts said back in July. All of this, a fascinating, fascinating time to think about these things in terms of rule of law and justice and the processes of government, but also recognizing that there are real live human beings inside all of these cases. They're real live human beings, citizens, residents of our nation, that are affected dramatically by what is being done. And so we never overlook that aspect of that. And that includes, again, this decision early on, unilaterally, by our president that the 14th Amendment doesn't mean what it says and says what it means. Birthright citizenship, he said, no longer exists, goes into court many cases around the country. Let's talk about just a couple of them that have percolated up, in which, again, courts have said that no, people in America born here in our nation, they do in fact have a right to citizenship. 150,000 children born each year, and therefore entitled to the benefits and the rights of citizenship in our nation. That's what the Constitution says. And absent that, they will be stateless. Absent that, some of them, if not all of them, finding themselves without the benefits of citizenship. 150,000 children every single year has an impact upon human beings. Well, for the second time in just about the past week, a federal judge has issued, get this, a nationwide across the board, every state, a preliminary injunction, more than just one of those TROs, the temporary restraining order I talked about before, to block President Trump's effort to end this concept of automatic citizenship for babies born on U.S. soil, to undocumented immigrants. This decision was handed down again by a judge we've heard from before. His name is Judge John Kauenauer. It was issued in Seattle. It came a day after another judge in Maryland across the nation did the same thing, also issuing a nationwide injunction, a nationwide ban against President Trump's executive order seeking to ban this concept of birthright citizenship. Now, the judge in the Seattle case, again, had previously entered a TRO. Now he's making it permanent. He said this. He said, the Constitution is not something with which the government may play policy games. If the government, Judge Kauenauer said, if the government wants to change the exceptional American grant right of birthright citizenship, it needs to amend the Constitution itself. And that's the judge saying, Mr. President, you do not have the capacity unilaterally to issue an executive order and change the Constitution as you like. Now, the current Justice Department, yes, under now Attorney General Pam Bondi, has said that's going to appeal that order where? To the Ninth Circuit. That's where the appeals from the district court in Western Washington will go. But all of this, of course, underscoring the unanimity of federal judges out there who are scratching their heads and saying, what's going on there? Birthright citizenship, again, guaranteed under the 14th Amendment. And ending that, of course, would require amending the Constitution. Judge Kauenauer was unpersuaded by the arguments, although there was skeletal made by the current administration in front of him. He said it's become ever more apparent that our president, he's talking about Donald Trump, for him, the rule of law is but an impediment to his policy goals. Those are strong words coming from a federal district court judge. The Maryland case, also national in scope. The Washington decision, again, joining along with Maryland and others out there. There are more hearings coming up in the days just ahead in other courts around the country. All of them bolstering this notion that the federal judiciary feels very strongly that what the president has done here, or attempt to do here, is wrong and cannot go ahead, not only for legal purposes, but also in the interests of those hundreds of thousands of children born and therefore getting citizenship in our country. This Seattle decision, of course, signals that the federal judiciary believes strongly in the Constitution, that their guardrail role is in place. It is significant that the judges who are entering these orders are appointed by Republican and Democratic presidents. We shouldn't have to say that. We shouldn't have to say that in America, but it underscores the unanimity, the nonpartisan nature of these decisions being issued, and indeed telling Donald Trump that he is wrong, that he cannot exercise his authority as he has been doing it, and that this energetic and decisive action that the Supreme Court has apparently given to him does not extend to changing the Constitution, Mr. President. That's the guardrail that we're seeing just in recent days and weeks. We will continue to see that as more district judges enter initial injunctions, TROs, permanent injunctions, and as these cases percolate up to the circuit courts as well. Let's talk about another federal program. This one's a bit more curious because it's a part of the administration's overall effort to try to reduce the overall federal workload and workforce in particular that has a huge workload. We've talked a lot about the importance of civil servants in our system. They're the ones who make government go. They're the ones who are responsible for, in their independence and their apolitical, nonpartisan approach to work, should be doing the work of you and me, ensuring that we are served according to the law without partisan interference. The administration is saying we'd like a lot of you to leave. Please leave. And if you leave, this is the promise initially given by the administration, if you leave now, we'll guarantee that you're paid through September. That particular package, of course, getting a lot of attacks once again in the federal district courts. We'll get to what has happened coming out of a federal judge's pen in Massachusetts in just a moment, but also underscoring the lack of legality for even that. An awful lot of people in Congress, other places, saying that that is violative, once again, of congressional action. We don't simply fire people and yet continue to provide them with an economic benefit of employment they no longer have. That's simply violative, contrary to the basic understandings, frankly, of any business, including that of the United States of America. So what happens is that the government, through the administration, announces this thing called the fork in the road plan. Presumably, you've got a fork in the road now. You can either continue to work for us, maybe we're going to fire you, we're not sure, or you can leave now and we'll pay you for some of the months just ahead. Detailed in an email sent to about 2 million federal employees just in recent times, it offers workers once again the chance to resign and be paid through the end of September without any congressional authorization, nothing out there to support that as well. Labor unions picking up on that, members of Congress picking up on that and saying, can't do that, Mr. President, challenging the legality of this, going into court, urging employees not to accept the offer ahead of a deadline of just this past week, saying that if you do resign, and indeed, according to the press secretary coming out of the White House, whose name is Caroline Leavitt, you've begun to get to know her a bit, more than 40,000 federal workers have already accepted that offer, for which there's no predicate. That, according to the White House press secretary, she said, we encourage people still to do that. Federal workers in the city should accept this very generous offer, she said, adding, we'll find highly competent individuals who want to fill these roles. In other words, leave your civil service positions. We'll find somebody else to come in and we'll presumably train them in the jobs for which you have already been trained. Don't worry. Go on with your lives. Leave now. That's the encouragement from this administration, once again, to undermine the civil servant workforce in America. Well, what happened, of course, is that you've got various groups, including labor unions, going into court. And one of those cases is in the District Court of Massachusetts. It's a federal district in and of itself, in addition to being the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And a federal judge named George O'Toole Jr., U.S. District Judge in the District of Massachusetts, stopped the Office of Personnel Management from moving forward with the program until Monday, put a stay on this. The deadline was previous to that, late this past week. The offer, which had been set to expire at 11:59 on Thursday, again, a part of this sweeping effort to attack, if you will, to reduce the federal workforce overall, plainly a part of this thing called DOGE, pursued by Elon Musk without any authority in and of himself. We'll get back to Elon Musk in just a few moments. And something that happened just this weekend with respect to his authority, all of this a part of their attempt to cut the size of the federal government and to do it in a draconian way. And again, is almost certainly unsupported by legislation. Well, the judge in Massachusetts, again, postponed that deadline, saying, well, you can continue to sign up for it, but I'm going to have a hearing on Monday afternoon about all of this. Put basically a TRO in place to enable people to continue to sign up for this if they wanted to do it, but promised a hearing on Monday afternoon to look at all of this, to figure out whether or not this program offering federal workers this incentive to quit, whether this makes sense. Stay tuned, plainly. Watch this space to see whether or not this federal judge, George O'Toole in Massachusetts, follows the plan, the pattern of other federal judges saying, wait a minute, Mr. President, do you have authority to do this? What's the argument in support of your authority? Isn't this the kind of thing that only the Congress can do? And yes, Congress has great authority when it comes to establishing the trappings of civil employment. A huge amount. They establish not only the agencies for which they work, the independent agencies, but also the ways in which they're compensated through our federal government. We'll see what the judge in Massachusetts does. We'll talk about other judges in America also pushing back on the initiatives of this presidency when it comes to the constitutionality and legality of these many executive orders here on Amicus, a law review.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today, I'm talking about why, if you've got savings, you need a high-yield savings account. High yield just means high interest, you know, the money the bank pays you for keeping your money with them. You will probably find the highest yield savings accounts at an online bank. Just go on and Google and do some research and figure out who's offering the highest rates right now. Now, lately, it's been between 4 and 5%. That is your savings earning real interest. And okay, figuring out all the details of opening a new bank account can be very annoying, but I bet you can probably get one going in less than an hour. So give yourself 60 minutes and get it done. I've done it. You'll thank yourself when you see your money making money for doing nothing. For more everyday money help, check out my videos at Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Solar Review, spending a lot of time talking about the status of these many, many breakneck speed orders being issued by the White House, changing the ways in which government works and not to the better. Let's talk next about USAID, the United States Agency for International Development. A bit of a programming note here. Yesterday, that is on Friday of this past week, had a great opportunity to sit in the Dom Salvia show as the host of that and spent the greater portion of that broadcast talking all about the United States Agency for International Development, its genesis, and what it does as a predicate to understanding what the president and the secretary of state have been doing with respect to that agency. I commend to your attention, to the extent that you want to go back and pull up that podcast of the Dom Salvia show just on Friday of this past week, a huge discussion with many of you in the community expressing outrage about what is happening with the United States International Agency for International Development, an independent agency. And that's where we begin. Important to understand. Yes, if you had to describe them in terms of their function, are they executive in nature? Yes, they are. They provide an awful lot of support for our international partners out there. We'll get to that in just a moment. But it's an independent agency, not subject to oversight and review direction of the presidency. There are a lot of those agencies in America in our constitutional development. Budget of over $50 billion sounds like a huge amount. It is, but also represents somewhere around 1% of our total national budget, about 10,000 employees worldwide. Let's get to their particular purpose. What do? They provide disaster relief to some of our partners and even countries in which we don't have strong partnerships, poverty relief in nations needing that support in dramatic ways, technical cooperation for global issues, including things like the environment, environmental justice overseas as well, bilateral initiatives, enabling, for example, the representatives of USAID to tap into the resources and the human resources of our own agencies in providing support for our international neighbors. Socioeconomic development, this one's huge. Enabling foreign countries, again, with our assistance, yes, our economic support, but mostly our human resources support, engaging with communities, the neighborhoods in which these USAID offices are located in countries around the world, quite literally Africa, Asia, Latin America, Middle East, Eastern Europe, and other places, all of them stationed around the world to try to promote the interests of justice, yes, but also, again, focusing upon human beings, providing them relief, suffering from disasters and poverty and economic blight, all kinds of things out there, socioeconomic development, technical assistance, financial assistance, public and private partnerships in those foreign nations, all of that, developing the ability of foreign countries to do these things under what? The encouragement and the support of, yes, indeed, the United States of America, and also sending the message that, yes, indeed, ally with us and we will continue to support you. Ally with others who may seek your attention. We're the ones giving you that attention, right? And so the Chinas and the Russias are out there. Those are not the folks who are necessarily getting the support that these countries necessarily, they're not giving the support these countries need, even as they compete with us in the international scheme for the attention of emerging democracies, emerging nations. There's also a huge diplomatic
international, and yes, indeed, national security interest in what we do overseas. Top of the list, humanity. But second and third down the road, it's in our national interest to have presence in nations around the world and to help our friends around the world. What has happened recently? Well, we know well that in recent times, the president has attempted to, and appears this weekend to be pretty successful in bringing to an end the United States AID. The plan was to put 2,200 employees on paid leave and recall nearly all of those agency workers who brought a huge amount of confusion caused by this, as the president's directed again through his edicts that all of these employees begin to dismantle the USAID offices around the world, shutter them. We know that in Washington, D.C. alone, right there in D.C., that the USAID office has basically been darkened. The lights are off. The signs outside the building have been covered. And this, of course, about a part of the president's plan to bring USAID to its close. Also a part, of course, about his overall view that the USAID, among many other agencies, bloated, too many people working already. Well, all of that, of course, getting an awful lot of attention internationally, an awful lot of people in the international community, including our allies, saying we need this support. We rely upon this support for our people, for the good things that USAID has done. And indeed, once again, group goes into a federal district court, this time again in Washington, D.C. And they get in front of a judge named Carl Nichols. You may remember him because he's been one of the judges who's also imposed a lot of sentences upon those January 6th rioters, those insurrectionists. We've talked a lot about Carl Nichols, U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. For what it's worth, once again, he is a Trump appointee. And yes, indeed, Carl Nichols, late this past week, issued a restraining order, temporary restraining order, pausing this imminent administrative leave of 2,200 USAID employees and a plan to withdraw nearly all of the agency's overseas workers within 30 days. Mr. President, Carl Nichols says you can't do this. He also ordered the temporary reinstatement of 500 agency employees already on administrative leave by virtue of what the president has directed inappropriately, unconstitutionally, with respect to this independent agency. Carl Nichols, federal district court judge, guardrail like the other judges, coming in and late this past week ordering the Trump administration to halt, at least for now, some elements of this omnibus attempt to shut down the U.S. Agency for International Development. The unions that brought this lawsuit, they're the plaintiffs, had called upon the court to block this based upon this unconstitutional and illegal action, saying it had generated a global humanitarian crisis and, yes, threatened American strategic interests. That's what the union had said. Again, the union of employees here, they represent foreign service officers. Judge Nichols had said the unions had established the employees affected by the leave and withdrawal offers would suffer irreparable harm, as would others in our nation and around the world. Global humanitarian crisis threatening American strategic interests. Significantly, the lawsuit also said not a single one of the defense actions to dismantle USAID, and by defendants, we're talking about Donald Trump and his policy implementers, were taken pursuant to congressional authorization and pursuant to federal statute. Congress, once again, is the only entity that may lawfully dismantle the agency. That's the allegation in the civil complaint to bring this forward. And that's the concept with which Judge Carl Nichols has agreed, filed this past week. Again, the groups, the Democracy Forward and Public Citizen Litigation Group and the American Federation of Government Employees, notes that the central role of Elon Musk, once again, in doing all of this and his hands all over this effort, now enjoined by a federal district court judge, at least for a while, until once again a court can entertain more information and argument about the legitimacy, if any, of doing all this. And we come back, yet another instance of more federal judges acting as safeguards of our democracy here on Amicus, a law review.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. An explosion injuring 11 people today at the Lord Corporation plant in Sagertown, Pennsylvania, about 35 miles south of Erie. Four firefighters and seven plant employees taken to the hospital. That company developing adhesives, coatings, motion management devices, and sensing systems. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau headquarters in Washington will be closed all this week. The latest government agency to be taken over by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency under the direction of the Trump administration. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut telling ABC's This Week.
This is a red alert moment when this entire country has to understand that our democracy is at risk. And for what? The billionaire takeover of government.
President Trump heading to New Orleans to watch the Super Bowl in person. Upon arrival at the game, the White House says Trump will meet with family members of the victims of the New Year's ramming attack on Bourbon Street. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Super Bowl 59. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens reporting from the Superdome in New Orleans, where the Chiefs take on the Eagles tonight in Super Bowl 59. I spoke to Zach Bond, who played quarterback for Brown Deer High School in the Milwaukee area, was switched to linebacker when he played for the Wisconsin Badgers. Bond was drafted by the Saints, where he played special teams, and now as the middle linebacker for Philadelphia, he's led the Eagles to be the number one ranked defense in the league. Bond is in the Super Bowl inside the stadium where he got his start in the NFL.
Yeah, it's awfully poetic. After the season, when I really sit back and look at it and think about it, just my journey in general is poetic, I think. But it's cool to be back here.
College basketball, the Badgers beat the Hawkeyes 74-63. Greg Gard liked how his team played defensively.
Really happy for our guys. I thought second half we were really aggressive on both ends of the floor defensively. You know, got to the rim, got to the foul line, and then eventually we were able to get some threes to go in.
That's Wisconsin head basketball coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of sunshine, a light southwest breeze for your Sunday. Highs in the upper teens for the overnight. Partly cloudy skies, lows near 0 to 5 below. Monday, we'll see increasing clouds, highs in the mid-teens. Light snow Monday night, currently 14 degrees.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir. Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk, Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A New Hampshire Senate bill just killed in committee would have moved the state's four presidential electoral votes to a winner-by-district system from a winner-take-all. Nebraska, the only state besides Maine which apportions its electoral votes by district, is trying to end it. The National Conference of State Legislatures defines a winner-take-all system as one where the winning candidate's party, no matter the margin of victory, gets all of the electoral votes. Currently in Nebraska, which has 5 electoral votes, and Maine, which has 4, one electoral vote is awarded for each congressional district a candidate wins, and the candidate who wins the popular vote statewide gets the rest. New Hampshire is currently a winner-take-all state with 2 congressional districts. SB 11 would have adopted the Nebraska and Maine model, likely in anticipation of gerrymandering a guaranteed GOP congressional district. But February 5th, the Senate Election and Municipal Affairs Committee recommended that it be killed in an upcoming full Senate vote. The AP reports that Nebraska's GOP is irritated that candidates Obama, Biden, and Harris won an electoral vote from Greater Omaha's Congressional District 2. Another legislative attempt to end it appears doomed to fail by filibuster, so state Republicans are preparing a ballot measure instead, hoping the voters will change what the legislature could not. We have links to the local reporting and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Pat Kreitlow.
Pat Kreitlow is off this week, so get used to some Bach in the Dock. Greg Bach and Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Monday through Thursday.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, talking today principally about the role of federal judges. Yes, federal judges in serving as the guardrails against many, if not all, of these administrative decisions, these executive orders issued by our president. We've talked about the ways in which multiple federal judges have told him, that is the president, that you cannot proceed with this birthright citizenship amendment to the Constitution. You cannot proceed, Mr. President, with this process for getting rid of federal employees in this incentive program, or at least not for now. Told him as well that when it comes to USAID, this huge agency responsible for international support and assistance, at least as to that, likewise, we're going to stay that. We're going to impose an injunctive order with respect to that as well. And indeed, there's another one. There are many others out there. This is a sampling, believe it or not, of the good work that federal judges are doing to uphold the law in America. This one coming just as we're going on the air here. A judge halting the access to that Treasury payment system by, yes, indeed, Elon Musk's team. A federal judge just Saturday, just today, as we're on the air, temporarily restricting access by Elon Musk's government efficiency program, those DOGE people, to the Treasury Department's payment and data systems, saying once again that there is a risk of irreparable harm. That's the standard by which federal judges look at these things when they come in on these emergency applications. Will there be some harm that we cannot repair down the road unless I stop this from going ahead? The judge today saying, yes, indeed, that's exactly it. This is U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer, and saying in particular that the new policy of allowing political appointees and special government employees access to these systems, which again, as you all know from the news, contains highly sensitive information like bank details, all of that heightens the risk of leaks and the system becoming more vulnerable than before to hacking. Judge Engelmeyer has now ordered that any such official who is granted access to the systems since the day the president became the president, he ordered to destroy any and all copies of that material downloaded from the Treasury Department's records and systems, get rid of it. And oh, by the way, if you don't do that, you're in contempt of court. He also restricted the Trump administration from granting access to these categories of officials. The defendants in that particular case, again, brought in the district court. The defendants, President Trump, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, Bessent, you may be getting to know him as well, and the Treasury Department itself have to show cause, that is, come back into the courtroom on February 14th, yes, Valentine's Day, before Judge Jeanette Vargas, who's handling the case on a permanent basis. In other words, it was enjoined by Judge Engelmeyer. Jeanette Vargas is the one who's going to be having this substantive hearing, but until then, Hands off, the judge is telling these DOGE officials. The order, once again, comes in response to this federal lawsuit filed by Letitia James. We've heard from her before. Of course, she is in New York. She is the attorney general. 18 other state attorneys general across the nation charging that when President Trump gave Musk the run of these government computer systems, he had, again, breach protections enshrined by the Constitution and failed to, here we go, faithfully execute the laws enacted by Congress. That's the due care clause of the Constitution. The attorneys general saying the president had given virtually unfettered access to the federal government's most extensive information to this group of what we think are young aides who work for Mr. Musk. Runs a program the administration calls, without, again, any congressional authorization, the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. It's not an actual department, doesn't exist, not given any legal authority. The group supposedly assigned to cut costs somehow. Members are attempting to access government data to support initiatives to block federal grants from reaching certain disfavored beneficiaries. That's according to the lawsuit. The return, the response from the defendants, including Elon Musk, publicly stated his intention to recklessly freeze streams of federal funding without warning, pointing to his social media posts in recent days. All of that happening just this weekend. Yes, indeed, a huge, huge breach if this were to continue. And also significant. Why? Because it's through those systems
that everyone who gets federal benefits, Social Security, Medicare, all kinds of things, payments made in the Agriculture Department, Health and Human Services, SBA, all kinds of things, food stamps, all kinds of programs out there get processed again through the Treasury Department because they're responsible for getting the money out there. They're the ministerial agency that is responsible for getting money into the accounts of corporations and, yes, of private entities, not-for-profit groups, and individuals who anticipate those monies coming into their accounts. Again, this is a big victory for the folks who are pushing back on all this. Elon Musk, of course, also showing up at the Labor Department, trying to do the same thing. We've got judges looking at that as well. The upshot of all of this, all of these four cases, they're symbolic of many other things in which federal judges today, once again, are saying, no, Mr. President, you can't do this. And at a minimum, scheduling more hearings, at which time there will be an exposition, testimony given, documents presented about not only what these orders are to the extent that they're understandable at all, but also the impact that they're having upon human beings in America, human beings across the face of the planet. Birthright citizenship, USAID, Treasury Department, this incentive program for jobs, all of them being stopped by federal judges, or at least for the time being, against the better advice of the advice, again, in quotes, of the lawyers who are surrounding Donald Trump. And I make that point just because many of the judges are also asking out loud, where are the lawyers who are surrounding the president? The lawyers, not the judges, the lawyers surrounding the president and saying, Mr. President, you can't be doing these kinds of things. Where are the lawyers, these judges are also asking? Well, apparently they're giving advice to our president that he can, in fact, go along and do these kinds of things. Federal judges saying, not so fast, can't do it. We have appreciated very much throughout our time on the air, of course, the calls and the comments from our listeners, and that includes just this morning. Delighted to have with me Kristen calling in from Waukesha here. Kristen, thanks for joining this conversation. Good to hear from you on our broadcast.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. All of this stuff that they're doing so rapidly, especially the USAID, I guess I'm just looking for your opinion. Are these people ignorant of the national security strategies that this agency holds together, or are they doing it on purpose to weaken our national security? Because that, I mean, this agency was put together with such care to really, like you said, you know, maintain these bonds with our allies and make the U.S. a partner around the world.
Right.
And to just pull the strings out from that, it's really dangerous.
It's huge.
And I can't believe we're going to just let the Kremlin and China fill the void of the United States around the world.
Could not agree more, Kristen. Absolutely. And that's the point, right, is that if you do these kinds of things, you're not only affecting, and I know the focus right now is on these employees, which are significant, right? These are people, again, could get jobs, as you and I both know very well, could get jobs in a private sector making a whole lot more money, stay at home and do an awful lot of things. They've decided to take these jobs themselves to assist other people in foreign countries. And the related point, which you're also making, assisting these foreign nations and communities in becoming better. And so it's not just an economic issue. It's not just a workforce issue, as important as those things are. It is, Kristen, could not emphasize enough what you just said, which is it's a national security issue, and it is an international security issue as well. When we vacate the field, as you just said, others will enter. Those others who enter the vacated areas are not our friends. Those are the Chinas and the Russias and the North Koreas of the world. It is also internationally, it's an international policy disaster. And that's why so many people, including people in Congress on both sides of the political aisle, are responding to this not well and talking about the dramatic impact that this will have upon our national security. You know, humanitarian assistance, a huge, huge in disaster relief, poverty relief,
a huge amount of this. And again, this goes back. The other part of this, of course, is that the Congress routinely, Kristen, as you know, always re-ups the authorization for this. It started way back in 1961. The Foreign Assistance Act basically established the basis for the USAID. John Kennedy, that's right. He's the one who first put this executive order to establish USAID in place. It's been around since the Kennedy administration. Republicans and Democrats alike, including Ronald Reagan, who actually increased dramatically the budget for the USAID. Why? Because he did exactly, Kristen, what you said, which is he was concerned about the place of the United States in the world stage and felt that our national interests were in support of doing more to assist our allies and even those people who may be on the fence overseas. Ronald Reagan did that, and the Congress every single year re-ups the authorization of this thing, again, called the Foreign Assistance Act, and supports USAID. This is not done. This is not done by any measure. And the head scratching question that you raise is the same one these federal judges are raising. Who's making these decisions? Who's making these recommendations about this? It is so ill-tempered. It is so ill-timed, of course, given what's going on in the world today. And even for the long run, hugely, hugely unproductive. We've got a federal judge who right now is at least for the temporary time, has said we're not going to go ahead with this. There's a lot. There's a lot on the plate of that involving employment issues, involving congressional issues to authorize, involving what USAID does generally. But it shows, I think, Kristen, and what others have commented about is the recklessness of this administration, all of these areas. This is a big one. All of them are big. This is a big one in terms of the future of our nation, the future of the planet. Thanks so much, Kristen, for your comment. Mark is also on the phone. Mark, thanks for waiting a very long time. Appreciate, as always, your contributions to our discussion.
Yeah, not a problem, Jim. I've actually gone out and been kind of scanning through some of the comments that have been made about this stuff. It appears that people do not understand what USAID does. They don't understand what the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau does. They don't understand what the Inspectors General do. It just briefly to put it in place. It is just remarkable the level of ignorance because most of these agencies have operated cleanly and effectively through the decades. You know, they haven't raised any eyebrows at all. So people don't understand what important roles they actually play. And for the Supreme Court, going back once again to the Supreme Court, assigning kingly powers upon the presidency, it's precisely what, if I understand it right, what the anti-federalists were concerned with. And what Alexander Hamilton said, no, you don't need to worry about the king becoming a oriental potentate and be surrounding himself with minions and mistresses and have his army of janissaries he can send out to attack his political foes. But precisely, I think that is what we are seeing today, because with his pardon of the January 6th insurrectionist and in some case treasonous people, that he has activated his own little private army that he could probably activate at any time, in addition to the ones that didn't show up on January 6th, would be in fully support of supporting Donald Trump in this. I mean, I could be wrong, but given Donald Trump's predilections, then what's to stop him now from declaring, like the old European lords, we see in popular literature, Dreitsignor, and describe, well, if there's some young virgin I see I want to have, I just send people out to scoop her up. And, would the Supreme Court even decide that, oh, that's okay. Maybe I'm being hyperbolic. But
well, no, I don't think so. I think, at the time of the issuance of this opinion back in July, and certainly that time, I've also sometimes said, I wonder if I'm being hyperbolic. And now we see the implementation of exactly what the Supreme Court said. And so it's not hyperbole, it's reality. And Mark, I appreciate very much your observation about all of this. And yes, indeed, that's one of the reasons why I have this broadcast, Civic Media, out there, trying to educate, going deep in some of these issues, making people aware of the implications of these acronyms when it comes to agencies. Mark, thank you so much for that observation. When we come back, we'll talk about the Department of Justice and things going on there. And then finally finishing the program this weekend by talking about the Proud Boys and something that's happened to them at the hands of a Superior Court judge in the District of Columbia. Stay with us for that discussion.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for matinee on air.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus, the last segment of our broadcast this weekend. We're talking again about the rule of law and one of those other safeguards that should be there. That is the U.S. Department of Justice. We'll see under the Biden administration whether or not there is any pushback, any tempering of some of these decisions coming out of the White House. That should be the role in part of the Attorney General. It certainly doesn't appear in the first few days of Pam Bondi's term as our Attorney General, our chief federal law enforcement officer, that she is adopting that role. She was sworn in just this past week. At the time, the president said this. He says, "I know I'm supposed to say she's going to be totally impartial." Yes, Mr. President, you should say that. With respect to Democrats, he said, "but I think she'll be as impartial as a person can be." Boy, that doesn't give us a whole lot of satisfaction or confidence, does it, when it comes to her commission? Indeed, what has she done in her first days? Well, she's also spoken about serving Donald Trump. Serving Donald Trump and not serving the people of the United States of America. I recall very well when I was a U.S. attorney, one of the regular meetings that we would have in Washington, D.C., all 92 U.S. attorneys coming forward. We met with Barack Obama in the White House in the East Room. And I remember very clearly him saying to us, "You know what? You are not my attorneys. You are not my attorneys. You're not even the attorneys, if you will, for that building down the way there for all of the other Department of Justice employees. You're not that at all. You're the attorneys for the United States of America, the people of this nation. We don't serve inside the Department of Justice the interests of the president. We serve the interests of justice." A difference from the past and this attorney general. What else has she done? She has certainly indicated the actions of Emile Beauvais in not only terminating prosecutors who were responsible for the January 6th and Mar-a-Lago cases, terminating the prosecutors in the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office who were responsible for prosecuting those 1,600 people responsible for the insurrection on January 6th. None of that's going to be turned back at all. She's also got on her desk, of course, this effort to try to address whether there are federal FBI agents who should be terminated. That's going on right now under the auspices of the acting Deputy Attorney General Emile Beauvais, likewise affecting the legitimacy of the rule of law force internal to the Department of Justice. She's done some other things. She's done a number of other things as well. That includes basically shutting down what has been called a DOJ task force targeting Russian oligarchs. These people are attempting to undermine the safety and security of our nation. Established under the prior administration, we're going to stop that from happening. We're no longer going to be addressing whether Russian oligarchs have an influence inappropriately in our government. She is also, however, establishing another task force. This one has to do with religion. She is establishing, again, announced just this past week by the president, an executive order creating a Justice Department task force to eradicate what he called anti-Christian bias within the federal government. The mission of the task force, according to the attorney general, is going to be immediately halt
all forms of anti-Christian targeting and discrimination in the federal government, including the Department of Justice, the FBI, which is the Department of Justice, the IRS and other agencies, will work to fully prosecute anti-Christian violence and vandalism in our society. That also announced by the Attorney General this past week. Again, we'd like to think that our Department of Justice, the White House, would embrace the diversity of all religions without establishing any of them, without breaching that line between government and religion. And that every religion, whether you are it is a Christian faith, a Hindu faith, a Buddhist faith, a Sikh faith, is Islam, Judaism, Sikhism, whatever the faith is, all of them are a part of our national experience. None of them should be impacted in any way by an attempt by the government to establish religion or even to promote one above another, which seems to be the approach of this task force. What else is the Attorney General doing? Well, we know as well that she has all but basically reinstated, giving a new life to the federal executions, the moratorium put in place by former President Biden, who ended federal executions and prevented those from going ahead. She has ended that. And so we can anticipate more federal executions happening. She has ended all diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts within the Department of Justice and required all employees to come back to work. No more remote work by February 24th. All of that happening inside the Department of Justice. Huge impacts as well upon our National Security Division, restricting and limiting the ways in which they do their work. A huge impacts as well. Some new policies with respect to environmental work as well. The Environmental and Natural Resources Division, that happening too inside the Department of Justice. We'll talk more about that and the further implications of the Bondi administration, the new Department of Justice, as future editions of Amicus Law Review are broadcast. Finally, this news item, also at the hands of a judge. The Proud Boys, again, responsible for much of what happened on January 6th. Many of them have their sentences commuted. A pardon issued to Enrique Tarrio, this fellow who was given a 22-year prison term on charges of seditious conspiracy, pardoned by this president, receiving a full and unconditional pardon, commutations of other sentences imposed upon this group that is plainly responsible for an awful lot of what happened on January 6th. Proud Boys no longer have control over their own name. Under a ruling that was just issued this past week by Superior Court Judge Tanya Jones Bozier, she is in the District of Columbia. She is effectively a state court, although D.C. is not a state. She's basically a state court judge. Effectively means that the Proud Boys chapters across the country can no longer legally use their name or the group's traditional symbols without the permission of, wait for it, the church that was attacked by the Proud Boys in June of 2023. The church was attacked. It was the Metropolitan African American Methodist Episcopal Church. Under this ruling by the judge, the infamous far-right group was stripped of its control over the trademark Proud Boys and was barred from selling any merchandise with either its name or its symbols without the consent of this black church in Washington that its members had previously vandalized. The church had won a $2.8 million default judgment against the Proud Boys, and Enrique Tarrio, several of the subordinates as well, attacked it in a night of violence after a pro-Trump rally that took place at the church. Now, as a result of judges once again enforcing the rule of law in America, this one a state court judge, a trial court judge in Washington, D.C., the rule of law upheld. All of that, a part of our continuing discussion here on Amicus Law Review. Appreciate so much your participation in our discussion and invite you back again next week as we continue to address law and government and the aspiration for justice in our nation. Have a good week, everybody.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Maggie Dawn.
Do you know that Donald Trump's draconian policies are hurting children right here in Wisconsin? Dane County's Head Start program experiences outages. We discuss at 3 o'clock.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Are you 50 or older? This news is for you. The CDC now recommends you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia. Even if you're healthy, your age puts you at risk. People 50 or older are over 6 times more likely to be hospitalized with pneumococcal pneumonia compared to adults 18 to 49. Just one shot can help protect you. Learn more and schedule at VaxAssist.com. That's VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency have gained access to at least 10 federal agencies. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is Musk's latest target. Its website now offline, operations frozen. And President Trump says he wants Musk to go even further. The Pentagon, the Department of Education.
He's not gaining anything. In fact, I wonder how he can devote the time to it. He's so into it.
PSA Airlines, a subsidiary of American Airlines, which flew Flight 5342, says it will award all 4 crew members with its honorary President's Award, its highest honor. 67 people were killed in that midair crash involving an Army Black Hawk helicopter and the American Airlines flight. Deep inside the New Orleans Superdome.
Wish you guys could smell it. It's smelling good over here.
Executive Chef Lenny Martinson and Executive Sous Chef Patrick Penye have been preparing goodies like cheesesteak with a Creole twist for Phillies fans and Kansas City barbecue burgers for Chiefs fans. Kickoff Super Bowl 59 at 6:30 Eastern. This is ABC News.